Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host here on this post-Thanksgiving program, 24th of November, 1 month away, folks. And I know it's not the 25th, but it's still 1 month away. And it's creeping up on us. Just like this program every week creeps up on us. Every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. regularly, but at this special time of 7 p.m. this Saturday evening due to ball games and all of the other sundrious items. And we are so thankful that you have joined us here on the program. Saturdays, normally 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we also are rebroadcast on Saturdays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time at a2zen.fm, and of course archiving these programs at the richarddugan.com radio shows page, and we certainly hope that you will check out the radio shows page as well. We are going to have a visit from our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald, a little later on in the program. And of course, again, this is the holidays, and we're all getting geared up and excited and all those good things, and hope that your holiday has begun well, whether it started with Thanksgiving or it started with Halloween or maybe it started with Labor Day. You get an early start, some of you. I know that I wait until 23rd or 24th of January or February to start thinking about the coming year. Beautiful weather pretty much everywhere that you can think of and look, and all kinds of incredible things happening. And I know people are also, they're gearing up for the 21st of December, 2012. I know that we've talked about it time and time again, that this program is going to be different because we're not really going to be talking about that. But it, obviously, there are all kinds of milestones ahead. New Year's Day is around the corner as well. And obviously, 2013, I'll have to talk to somebody about what that number represents or means in the regards to I'll talk to Beth McDonald about that on one of these programs, 2013. Well, today we're going to get into a subject that back when I was working for a religious radio station, my guest doesn't know this either, I actually had a couple, a married couple. They were both Mennonites. This is the reason why it's significant to me, because when I interviewed them, we were interviewing them about their book on sex. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, that seems a little incongruous to say the least. Not to say that Mennonites don't have sex, because obviously the faith is perpetuated through that process, but it just seemed kind of strange that we would be doing that. And we did. And we talked in very appropriate terminology, nothing that the FCC could get upset with. We may go in that direction today, but one of the areas that we'll talk about, I think that we'll be getting into, is what role does our sexual energy play in our personal and civilized growth, if you will, our present and future? What kind of a role has it played to get us to where we are, and what kind of a role will it play in our lives down the road? We'll talk a little bit about that with my guest. This is a book that I think you'll be very interested in, men or women for that matter. Great Sex Naturally. It's every woman's guide to enhancing her sexuality through the secrets of natural medicine. And my guest is Dr. Laurie Steele-Smith. And Laurie, thank you so much for joining us. Your husband, if I'm correct, Alex, has also co-written this book with you.
Yes, he did.
And so you come to us with what, firsthand experience?
Well, I think that I come to you with more than firsthand experience. I've been a practitioner of women's health for close to 20 years. And I can tell you that over the 20 years, I've had so many women coming into my office and asking me, you know, where did my libido go? And how come sex no longer conveys the same sense of magic and passion that it once did? And what can I do to get it back? So, you know, when I really looked at what was going on with these patients, you know, they had a myriad of health issues. They had digestive issues. They had headaches. They had hormonal imbalances. And really, the book is a women's health book to help them rekindle the flames of passion through getting their health back, through increasing this powerful life force called chi. by increasing their health and vitality, because really our sexual energy is a creative energy, and it's not going to come from a pill.
Mm-hmm.
We know that big pharma is trying to create a pill to, you know, help women experience more sexual pleasure, but that's not where it's going to come from.
Right.
You know, it really does come from this wellspring of being healthy and vital and feeling creative in your life.
Well, I know that there are those who are kind of questioning what's going on, whether it be in the pharmaceuticals or otherwise, but just in our society in general. And I'm curious as to any research or study that you have done regarding man's past sexual energy and vitality, if you will. And when I use the word man, I'm speaking of men and women. In terms of the aging process, I mean, we're all going through that. And at a certain point, and let me rephrase this, at a certain point, doesn't the libido start to drop off?
Well, that depends, you know. I mean, I think we have to look at a broader context of the word libido, because libido, like I said, it's a creative energy. And, you know, that doesn't need to drop off. I mean, I have patients who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, that are still sexually very active and still enjoy that aspect of their lives, but they also are very creative people in other aspects of their lives. You know, it's not just about intercourse. It's not just about sex. It's actually a much broader definition. So does it have to drop off? No, it doesn't have to drop off. We could sublimate it into our creative pursuits. We could sublimate it into all our creative projects or our work. I mean, I think of what's happening with a lot of my patients, men and women, is that they're just simply fried. They're exhausted. They're adrenal fatigue. They have no extra energy left. And, you know, I think that we have to bring to consciousness what we're doing with our energy and our time. And if we are working 80 hours a week and we have no time left, you know, to cultivate feelings of intimacy with our partner, then, you know, basically it's kind of like we're kind of dried up in terms of chi, right,
mm-hmm.
in terms of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to learn how to, you know, go out and smell the roses and take time to nurture ourselves in order to be able to nurture others through being intimate. And I often say, you know, this book is really about female personal empowerment and really about couple empowerment, because ultimately this book is about a high level of self-love and self-care so that women can build their vital energy, and therefore they can then reach out, embrace, and fully express their love for another person through their most intimate sacred part of themselves, and to join with the person that they love. And if they're fried, tired, exhausted, and sick, they're not going to have that extra energy to do that.
Well, I'm curious as to, I mean, you've made, there is no question it's a compelling argument, especially when it comes to men in particular, but women, because they are 50% of the workforce, quite honestly. They're working just as hard, and they're going home just as fried as men. And yet, I have heard it said that the responsibility, for some reason, and maybe it's because we haven't gotten over that line, if you will, the responsibility still seems to be left to the men. Okay, you're supposed to initiate. You're supposed to make me feel romantic, you know, and so on and so forth. You're supposed to woo me. Well, the guy is fried. He doesn't have the energy, let alone the thought process. And when I use that terminology, what I mean is because he's fried. He can't think of anything else. So it's almost as though a relationship in that kind of context is almost doomed.
Well, I agree, because, you know, we are each personally responsible for our own health and wellness and our own sexual pleasure. And I think that that's kind of it's just, you know, people need to get out of that kind of thinking. In the book, I do have a whole chapter on men's health, because I think women need to understand their partner's sexual wellness and their partner's health and vitality, and has how it waxes and wanes as they go through time. Now, it doesn't have to wane at all. I mean, really, you know, men have the opportunity to also stay in peak physical health and condition,
mm-hmm.
you know, through the choices that they make each and every day. And I think that women thinking that, you know, the man's responsible for her pleasure is really kind of an outdated idea and truly, women are responsible for their own sexual pleasure, their own sexual health, and their own sexual vitality. And then they need to understand the man they've bonded to. They need to understand the kind of, you know, the vicissitudes of life, right? And,
right.
And what are kinds of changes that their partner's going through, and have compassion for that, and to be able to help them to achieve, you know, great health and wellness too. And, you know, when people have been together for long periods of time, it's a very different kind of dance that happens. And in the book, I talk about this concept of salubrious sex. And, you know, what that is basically intimacy that's, the goal isn't necessarily climax. The goal is to really love each other and to be in this kind of a sexual dance that, you know, yes, you do it in the sexual act, but you also do it in your regular life. So, you know, it's to really take sex to a level that sex is deeply healing. And, you know, ultimately that's really what sex is. I mean, we have this whole other culture that's out there that's
right.
Where sex is kind of dirty, or sex is, you know, all the S&M and, you know, all that kind of thing. But, you know, what I'm talking about is sex about being about love, and sex being a very deeply healing process, because all kinds of neurotransmitters are released in the brain, and these neurotransmitters help people to feel better about their lives. They help them feel happier. It helps them bond with their partner on a deeper level when they are intimate. And, you know, this is for, you know, this book was written for people who want to be healthy and vital and have a wonderful couple, be a wonderful couple throughout their lives. And to really give this idea of sex and sexual energy just a very different concept. In fact, I think it's actually even a very European concept. I was, as a teenager, I lived in Europe for 3 months in Norway, and then I went back and I lived in Germany for a year as an exchange student. And, you know, people in Europe are very different about their bodies, and they're very different about their, they're very matter-of-fact about sex and sexuality, and in a very healthy way. You know, they see it just as a part of life, and mm-hmm. they don't get all squeamish about it. And I think that for most people in our country and in Western world, sex is a wonderful expression. It's a wonderful human expression. And people need to be healthy and vital in order to be able to have the energy and the chi and the vital force to be able to have that sexual expression, in order to be able to have the energy left over to be able to bond with their partner. And bonding with their partner is so important for the health of a relationship.
I think that one of the misnomers that you've touched upon, I think it's important for us to maybe elaborate a little bit more on, having to do with the purpose of the sexual relationship as our society has defined it, and the conditions that seem to have cropped up specifically in men, but I know, again, you've stated this well at the beginning of the program, in women as well, especially as you see the commercials for the various, we'll refer to them as, because I know they're not all blue pills, but we all know that we're talking about those types of, and you have this condition, this ED, this erectile dysfunction in folks who are over 50 or over 60 or whatever this thing is. And I'm watching these commercials, and that was why I asked the question earlier about age. And yes, I have heard of people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, even into their 90s still engaging in some sexual activity. But I got to wondering, wait a minute, are they trying to force us into having sex by providing this artificial stimulation, if you will, so that a man is always ready? And it just seems to me like there's something missing in that whole equation that you just talked about, that it is not about the climax, but a lot of us have been, even no matter how open-minded we might be, no matter how wonderful our relationships might be, they're still in the back of our minds that if I start this, I have to be willing to finish it, whether it be for her or for me, because she's expecting me to finish and she wants me to help her to finish. You see where I'm going with this?
I do, you know, and I think there's a lot of pressure. I think there's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not really what salubrious sex is about. And you can call it tantric, but, you know, you don't need to bring that word into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one thing we have to remember, you know, Viagra and drugs like that do nothing to increase libido and vital force. All they do is help a man have an erection through vasodilation. And they do nothing to treat the underlying cause of the ED, right? And
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's emotional, and
yeah.
sometimes it's has to do with diet, and sometimes it has to do with cardiovascular disease or drugs that they're on. You know, a lot of men don't realize that beta blockers can cause ED, and it's really important that they know the side effects of the medications that they are on, and you know that can have a profound impact on a man's psyche. Like, oh my gosh, I just can't do this anymore, and the man's only 52 years old. You know, and to me, that's young.
Wow.
So you know, I think that we have to remember that these drugs, these Viagra-like drugs or Viagra itself, they do nothing to increase libido. They do nothing to increase overall health and vitality, and they do nothing to increase that powerful life force. In addition, that can put a lot of pressure on a man to perform, and you know, maybe he doesn't really want to.
Right.
And I think communication in a couple is really important, and communication and having sex be something that's about nurturing and loving each other rather than achieving this. This goal at the end. You know, they say that in America, the typical sexual interaction's an 8-minute gyration that usually ends in like male and maybe female. In fact, I think it was around 20% of women actually have orgasms on a regular basis when they have the sexual act. And, you know, that's kind of pathetic, actually, because it's really about this the art of loving each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really what it's about.
Right.
At least that's what my book is about. And instead of it, you know, just being the how-tos. In fact, really, there aren't any how-tos in my book. It's more a book about how to create wellness, how to create sexual health and wellness in both men and women, and especially in women. Because I think that also for women, there's a real disconnect when they do feel pelvic pain or when they have hormonal havoc. And when they have a number of health issues, they don't feel very amorous when they have all these health issues. So, you know, I realized that this book needed to be written because there really wasn't a positive health book out there. I mean, some of the books I read to research for this book, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm never having sex again.
Yeah, yeah.
This is horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, what Great Sex Naturally is about, it's about women having a guide to help them enhance their sexuality through the secrets of natural medicine, through Chinese medicine and naturopathic medicine, and to give them the tips and tools they need to create overall health and wellness, and then for them to also understand their partners and giving them also natural alternatives.
To me, this is really at the core of, as I have studied it over the years, it is at the core of the existence of our civilization, whether it be specifically the physical sexual act that populates the world, or the sexual energy and intimacy, if you will, with a couple that builds the world, not in terms of people, but in terms of creativity, in terms of the inventions and all of the things that we see around us. They were all created with some level of sexual energy, that chi, as you're talking about.
Well, that's true. And I think also people are able to really achieve a high level of success in their professional lives when they have a secure attachment, to a partner. And if they have an insecure attachment to a partner, they end up spending a lot of energy in fear and anxiety. Oh my gosh, is he going to call? Oh my gosh, is he going to come home? Oh my gosh, does he care? Does he care about me? Oh my gosh, you know, and a secure attachment will lead to also having a flourishing and very special intimate life versus an insecure attachment or an avoidant type attachment, right? I mean, some people have avoidant personality types where they're never really going to make you feel safe, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that that's a big issue, especially for women. I mean, specifically. But men want to feel safe, too. They want to feel as though they're in a secure relationship where they're not being questioned all the time about their not only their fidelity physically, but even emotionally. Because I've even heard it said that in many instances, emotional infidelity can be just as devastating as physical.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, I think when we look at different personality types and different relationship types, people who are in secure, attached relationships, intimate relationships, not only do they have a better sex life, but they also are able to achieve much more in their lives in general because they, you know, in terms of their career, in terms of their education, in terms of their ability to achieve what they want to achieve in lives, because they've got a partner. They've got a real, true partner in their lives. They don't have somebody who's constantly jerking them around.
Yeah.
And both, and this is for both men and women. Now, there are personality types that, unfortunately, maybe because of the way they were raised, men or women, you know, they can never fully let someone into their heart. And, you know, that's very sad for them, but I recommend they go get therapy. They go to look at some of the ways that they have their relationship dynamics, you know, whether it's personal dynamics or, you know, with their personal friends or with their primary partner, and to really tease out the details of their personal reactions and interactions with their significant others. Because if they do have a tendency to have an avoidant type attachment where they're kind of always constantly pushing their partner away, then they're missing out on something really beautiful and something really amazing, which is a secure attachment that enables them to have a much much more powerful relationship.
I'm curious as to, again, I know that your husband has co-written this book with you. Is there, I know you said you have a chapter in here for men, which I greatly appreciate that we at least got a chapter. But in the reality of it, the whole book is actually for men too, and it probably would behoove them to pick up a copy of your book, Great Sex Naturally, to understand more the concerns, or maybe for that matter, maybe even read it together with their partner.
Oh, yeah. No, I've actually seen that more men are buying the book for their partners.
Well, now, wait a minute. But that's not necessarily a good and fair thing to do, in my opinion, because what you're saying is, here, dear, you have a problem, read this book.
Yeah, I don't think that's the energy they're coming at it with.
Well, I think
it's more like, hey, honey, this is fun. You know, let's look at this.
Okay.
And, you know, I think that the men who, you know, truly love their wives or their partners definitely, you know, they want to help. They want to help. And they want to help because not only is she going to possibly have more libido and sexual energy, but she's just going to feel so much better if she can resolve a lot of these underlying health issues, you know, whether it's issues that have to do with chronic vaginal infections or urinary tract infections. In fact, I see this in a lot of women in perimenopause that, you know, the tissues of the vulva and the vagina are estrogen dependent, and as estrogen levels plummet, these tissues become thinner, they become drier, and a lot of women don't realize that their chronic urinary tract infections are because the urethra itself, which is the opening of the bladder to the outside of the body, is now much more vulnerable to invasion by bacteria because of this decrease in estrogen. And for a lot of my patients in this period of time in their lives, I start to give them very, very low-dose estriol vaginal suppositories or vaginal cream. Mm-hmm. This completely rehydrates the tissue. When estrogen levels plummet, the tissue also becomes a pH shift so that it becomes much more alkaline, and this can lead to bacterial overgrowth in the vagina. Can also lead then to yeast issues because the vagina prefers a much more acidic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so using very low-dose estrogen, and then in addition, you know, for women who can't use estrogen, then having alternatives like aloe ointments or vitamin E topically can really keep these tissues hydrated. And then in addition, they found that either you use it or you lose it, that also sexual activity itself helps to maintain integrity of the tissues. And not having sex for long periods of time can actually lead to potentially more breakdown of the tissue. So I think that women need to know some of these things that happen that affect their sexual health. You know, the bladder infections, the vaginal infections,
mm-hmm.
Also urinary incontinence, and there are many things that women can do to correct that.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, the book offers a plethora of many tips and tools that they can use to try to also increase the health and vitality of their pelvic area.
I want to go back just a moment to something you had talked about, certainly the concerns on both partners about themselves and, gee, can I really do this anymore because of, and I think one in particular that will crop up, especially for men, especially as they head into their 50s and 60s, if not earlier, has to do with not just heart conditions, because I know that I've heard of men who have had heart attacks who have rather happy, healthy sex lives, but high blood pressure. That's a big issue for a lot of men and women too. But I'm sure that there has to be a concern And yeah, maybe you should be talking to your doctor and saying, asking the doctor as well. Well, we have a doctor, Dr. Lori Steelsmith with us, and her book is Great Sex Naturally. In regards to high blood pressure, it's like, well, wait a minute, if I engage, my blood pressure is going to be going up, is it not, and so on and so forth, and am I not risking, some kind of physical injury, heart attack, et cetera, if I go this direction with my partner?
There's a time where you do need to be on medication, and that's absolutely indicated, especially if your blood pressure is crazy high, then you do need to be on a beta blocker. Mm-hmm. But there's always an underlying issue, and that issue is often diet, exercise related, especially when we're talking about cardiovascular system. If you do have a family history of high blood pressure and it's high blood pressure that's out of control, then yes, you need to be on blood pressure meds. But there are also blood pressure medications that don't cause ED. So you can be using diuretics, for instance, that don't cause ED. And what the goal would be, like if I have a patient who comes in whose blood pressure was, 210 over 110, okay, that person needs to be on something really strong like a beta blocker. They come into my office, they're having some of the side effects from that beta blocker. We'd immediately start them on a great foundation of health. In fact, the whole book starts off with a foundation of health, which we're looking at diet, exercise, detoxification, and the mind, okay, and where we make our choices from. And we solidify that, and then we use our botanical medicines to also help create better health in the whole body and help to create better health in the blood vessels. And we also have botanicals that help to lower blood pressure. And then my goal would be to get them off the beta blocker and onto lisinopril or HCTZ or something that's a little bit weaker, something that they won't need as powerful blood pressure medication. Often these spikes, really big spikes in blood pressure, come with, very high levels of stress. And if somebody's had a crisis in their lives, then, yes, we need to kind of sit tight and wait until that crisis abates. But if they're not in major crisis and it's just choices that they're making where they're working 80 hours a week and, they've taken on too much, then we need to also look at, why are you doing this? And what's the addictive mm-hmm. element here? And then I think, as my patient is getting healthier, more vital, then we can switch them over to a less intense blood pressure-lowering medication. Some people need to stay on blood pressure-lowering meds, but you don't want to be on one that's going to affect your sexual vitality, and then which in turn, often with men, can also affect their self-esteem, and then that then leads to a whole spiral, downward spiral of events, right? Then they end up on an antidepressant, and then what does that do? Well, that's going to lower your libido even more. That's going to kind of make you feel kind of neutral all the time, which is not such a great place to be. I mean, it's better than somebody who's, that's an okay place to be if you're somebody who's suicidal, but it's not okay place to be for someone going through life to always be in neutral. Well, I don't really feel happy, but I don't really feel sad. I don't really feel anything. And that's not very fun to live with either or to be married to. Yeah. And the goal here is to help each individual be as healthy and vital as they possibly can be, and not to do anything foolish like, just stop taking your blood pressure medication. But you can really get off the beta blocker and onto something that's much safer through changing your lifestyle and through taking, using natural medicines to help you get there.
When we come back, I want to, I was thinking about how I was going to phrase this, and I'm going to phrase it the way I thought of it. When we come back from our break and our conversation with Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, I would like for you to talk to me about whether this is a myth or true in regards to male masturbation and prostate cancer. When we come back, we'll talk more about that here on Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
For those of you who were listening to the end of our last segment with Dr. Lori Steelsmith, the author of Great Sex Naturally, I asked the question, or actually posed to her something that I put two things together that I had heard. And Dr. Lori Steelsmith, author of Great Sex Naturally, a co-author actually, along with your husband, I had heard that men, no matter what the age, who whether they regularly engage in sexual activity to climax or ejaculation, or they masturbate, reduce their risk of prostate cancer. I don't know what the percentage was, but I know that I had heard that somewhere. And I'm wondering if any of that is even true, or if that's just a wives' tale, an old myth.
No, it's actually true, and I have a study that supports it in my book. I'm looking for it right now as we're talking. And actually, they found that when men do have a regular release from their prostate, and actually, you know, through having an ejaculation, that they actually have lower incidence of prostate cancer because they're cleaning that area out. You know, they're think of it as they're allowing the chi to flow through there rather than get stuck and stagnant.
Right.
And not just chi, but also all the other
physical fluids and so forth?
Yeah, byproducts of metabolism are also going to be released through there. So I think that's, I mean, I know that's absolutely true, and I do have it in my book as a study to back that up.
Now, this is going to sound kind of strange for men who have had bouts of prostate cancer. Can the conclusion even be closely made that those men who have had to deal with prostate cancer don't have an active, regular sex life, or at least don't self-pleasure to release?
No, I don't think we can make that conclusion. I think that, you know, prostate cancer is really an environmental disease. At this point, there can be some genetic component to it. But, you know, a lot of my patients who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer don't have any family history. And unfortunately, we have a lot of chemicals in our environment, environmental chemicals, mimickers, they're called xenoestrogens. And I think that these are playing a huge role. And you know, I think we also have to keep in mind that, you know, cancer itself, it's, yes, the manifestation of the cancer, let's say, in the breast or the prostate, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We really have to treat the whole body. It's not just the prostate. It's the whole body. It's the health and vitality of that entire person that's manifested in this cancer. Mm. So, you know, yes, we can have the prostate removed. Yes, we can have it excised, lymph nodes dissected. You know, they can you know, remove the cancer in some cases if it's caught early enough. But you have to treat the whole body. You have to treat the whole system because it's the immune system and it's the lymphatic system and your cardiovascular system and it's everything. And, you know, I just had a patient in my office the other day and, you know, he's a really great guy, but he eats a lot of local food and it's high in saturated fat and fat. Mm. And he just spent, you know, the last 2 years of his life were insane stress. He's a lawyer. And, you know, I can't say that that's where it came from, but, you know, your body is actually a human physiologic organism, and it has certain laws that it lives by. And if you treat your body well, if you give your body the sunlight, the sleep, the nutrition, the love, the care, the right food, I mean, every cell in your body is going to work at a different level. It's going to work at a different level than if you don't give your body those things. And, you know, there is something in our culture about sort of patting people on the back that are workaholics. But, you know, in truth, who wins in that situation?
Yeah.
You know, who wins? Maybe the company they work for.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But ultimately, they don't win. And, you know, we want to be looking at the choices that we make each and every day and how we make those choices to ultimately result in a lifetime of wellness. And I think we have to redefine our idea of what success is. You know, success is not just how much money you have in the bank and what kind of house you live in and what kind of car you drive. Success is really how vital and healthy are you? What kind of relationship do you have? And that really ultimately is what's going to enable you to also be more successful in your business life. And if you can put those pieces together, you're going to be able to go really far in your life. And I really want people to hear that because it's not the 10 cups of coffee a day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, truly about you being this healthy, vital force in your life and being able to make healthy choices for yourself in order to be this powerful. Your power, each and every person listening to this, you are a powerful life force, and we want to cultivate that.
Well, you have raised a very interesting flag, if you will, because one of the issues that we deal on this program with, I don't think that was grammatically correct, needless to say, has to do with finding those new ways of living, because the ways in which we're living aren't working. All you have to do is look around you and see that. And you, as a doctor, see it more prevalently, more specifically, more microscopically, if you will, when you have patients come in out of the civilized world with all of these different conditions, because our society and our civilization here in the United States that's being spread across the globe is killing us. It's flat out killing us. And people such as yourself are trying to help to open our eyes as individuals to see that there are other ways of living, that we don't have to. I mean, it kind of goes back to the question that you posed more broadly to the audience about working 80 hours a week, and is this really what you want to do? And we kind of put that to our listeners. Is this the life you really want to live? For people who have lost their jobs, for example, I've you know, and it's a hardship. I you know, my heart goes out to those who have and have been looking. But did you really love that job? How much stress was that putting on your body, both physically, mentally, and emotionally, that is now released? I mean, okay, now you have a new stressor called unemployment and trying to make ends meet. But I'm wondering, doctor, if, you know, that's kind of where we have to start. We have to sort of rebuild our lives as individuals and say, what can I do not to put that stress back in my life, not to put that kind of 80-hour-plus work week and so forth that's taking away from my relationships?
Well, yeah, I think it's about, you know, looking at addictive behaviors and the possibility that a lot of people are in fear. You know, people, what motivates you? You know, let's look at what motivates you. Is it fear? Is it seeking approval? Is it money? And then why money? Because really, if you look a little deeper, it's not just money. It's usually fear of not having it, right?
That's a fear, and yeah.
Yeah, that's a big fear. It's a primal survival instinct, right? But at what point is it too much? At what point is it too much to be pushing at that level? Because, you know, people could move. They could move to a place that's a lot less expensive and, you know, create a lifestyle that really does serve them and their families. And I think it's also about getting your values straight.
Yes, yes.
You know, and bringing to consciousness, you know, what you're actually choosing for yourself. Because if you're just walking right into the pattern of being a workaholic or being a self-sabotager, then we need to look at that, unless you don't want to. I mean, if you're okay with being 50 pounds overweight and, you know, yeah, what I mean, not sleeping at night and being on antidepressants, so, you know, that's okay.
Sure.
But if you want to change it, I want to just tell your listeners, health is really easy. Being really healthy, it's actually really easy. It's not that complicated. You don't really need to read a million diet books to be really healthy. You just need to eat really good food. You need to eat the highest quality food you can. You need to move your body every day. You need to make sure you're eliminating well, which is, you know, why I have this whole great sex detox in the book, which is, you know, a 21-day cleanse. But you don't have to do anything even that fancy. You know,
yeah,
you just need to eliminate every day. And then we need to kind of bring to consciousness what we're doing with our choices. And you start there. Just start with one of those, and it'll act as a domino effect, and it will reverberate into all areas of your life. And the next thing you know, you're starting to make healthier choices each and every day. And 30 days down the line, then all of a sudden you're making 30. You know, you've completely shifted your life.
If you can, I've heard it said that if you can get through a 30-day transition period, whether it be a detox, whether you're learning how to meditate, whether you're learning new techniques or techniques for intimacy and so forth. If you can do that for 30 days, it then starts to become a part of who you are and what you are all about. You begin to really assimilate it into the cells of your body.
That's right. That's right. And I love this quote by John Muir. He says, when we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. Right?
Yes.
So pick one thing, and
yeah,
you know what? Everything else will change.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also what I've been telling people. I'm learning there are certain myths that I grew up with as a child. I'm finding out are not myths. They were sayings that are lies. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me is a lie. Because words words do hurt. And you can't change other people is also a lie. Now, you can't do it consciously, and you can't do it actively. But when you go through a 30-day process, whatever it may be, to change you, you change the people around you because they then must adjust to the new you. And by virtue of that, you've changed them. And you may change friends and acquaintances. You may change partners, but you have actually made a change. So it is possible for all of us to change the world in which we live for the better if we start taking better care of ourselves, right?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's about people creating the highest quality of life that they can for themselves. And each and every one of us has that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know a little bit more about Dr. Lori Steelsmith in terms of this book, in terms of why focus so much. I guess I should back up and ask what your area of expertise is medically.
Well, I'm a naturopathic physician and a licensed acupuncturist, and I've been a specialist in women's health care for, like I said, the last 20 years. And I have written two books. My first one was called Natural Choices for Women's Health, and that book goes through each key area of a woman's body to help her to create the best health that she can. So bone health, breast health, mental health, pelvic health, digestive health, liver health, kidney health, immune health, and gives them tips and tools from both Chinese medicine and naturopathic medicine on how to create wellness in each area of the body. And I'm an avid educator, an avid writer. I love research. And I feel like my personal mission is to be able to educate and teach people how to be as healthy as they possibly can be. And I do see some men, but mostly I'm seeing women in my practice. I also have a whole other aspect of my practice, which is kind of fun, and it's a physical medicine practice where I do a lot of acupuncture for musculoskeletal problems and neural prolotherapy and some other things. But I'm finding that, you know, I had a patient, for instance, with chronic rectal spasms, vaginal spasms, as well as bladder spasms, and this woman had never been able to have intercourse without there being a lot of pain. And she had a lot of spasms in this area, and we just figured out that she had been thrown from a horse many times when she was a young woman, and she had traumatized her pelvic area and the sacral nerves and the nerves that supply these areas. And I started doing a lot of acupuncture with her, as well as this neural prolotherapy, which are sub-Q injections of glucose, and just did it on her sacrum. And I'll tell you, it was pretty remarkable how much she improved in her symptoms. And anyhow, I think that we need to look beyond just painkillers and medications, and we need to look beyond some of these drugs that are out there to treat various conditions and look at other things like the prolotherapy, acupuncture, and some of these more innovative, less toxic ways of helping to heal nerves and heal tissues. And for this patient, I mean, it was life-saving. You know, she's now interested in starting a relationship. You know, she's 38 years old and has always kind of pushed men away because she's afraid of, oh my gosh, because if it gets to that point, then we're going to be intimate and then it's going to be painful. And for her to be able to have relief from that pain was pretty remarkable. So my practice does encompass, you know, it's multifaceted, but I do have a specialty in women's health and utilizing a variety of naturopathic and sort of cutting-edge tools to help women create the best possible health that they can.
Would you say that here in 2012, the 21st century, that women's health is starting to come up to the level of men's health as it was not in the 20th century?
I do. I think that there is. I mean, I know that we didn't have as much research on women's cancers and early detection, you know, for various cancers as we do now. And I think that, you know, I can't wait to see the next 10 years and and what else is going to happen? Because it seems like we've had, you know, a lot of progress in this area.
And that's obviously a good thing, because it's the total population that has to be taken care of, not just half of it. Because I know in interviewing folks over the last 30 plus years that it's gotten better. I remember when I first started doing programs on health in general, that there was always that criticism that women were never their health was never taken all that seriously. And I've seen situations with women I've known who they would go in and they would talk about a particular condition, and the doctor would say, oh, well, here, take this and take that. And, oh, no, that can't be happening because this, that, and the other thing. And they would take scans and so forth, and they just wouldn't listen. And I think that's another issue, too, is that both men, but in particular women, are becoming even more proactive about their health because they notice something that it's not critical at this this juncture, but that if it goes another 6 months, it will become critical. So they have to stay on top of their own health.
I also think we have a much more progressive culture in general. People are talking, men are talking, women are talking. They're, you know, women are talking about menopause on primetime TV.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
I mean, we have just a very different culture than we did, at least in my mother's generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's really wonderful. And like I said, I can't wait to see what's to come.
I think it's fascinating to obviously watch the development, but also to hopefully watch, and I think I'm seeing a little bit of this, the changes in the media, in the way in which both men and women are portrayed, although I have to admit that there are some programs that are even on today that still perpetuate that, the knucklehead who really doesn't listen to the wife, and the wife who just constantly is saying stuff, and so on and so forth. And, you know, those old things where the woman is in charge, but the guy is led to believe that he is. Those kinds of things that really don't help. And this is more on an emotional or psychological level. But again, it's like you said before, you go to attack, you deal with one issue, you're bringing the whole universe with you, because
right.
it's all tied together.
It is all tied together.
When you decided to focus specifically on sexuality and specifically women's sexuality, did that seem like just a natural progression?
Well, it really was. I'll tell you, it seemed like so many women were so afraid to really talk about it. You know, they would wait until my hand was on the doorknob and I was about to leave our 45-minute visit, and they're like, oh, and by the way, doctor, I have just one more question.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, I wrote this book because, A, I don't have time to give them a 300-something page presentation at their visit, which is what the book ended up being. And two, it just seemed like so many women needed this advice. They needed this information, which I couldn't find anywhere. I mean, like I said, I looked and looked, and all I could find were these, like, really awful books.
Yeah.
And they weren't really health-related. And, you know, or it was just, you know, like, I think Suzanne Summers has done a good job trying to introduce natural medicine to our mainstream world, albeit with a bit of, I don't know, I guess I'm much more conservative than the doctors that she has interviewed. But, you know, like her book, like The Sexy Years, and the whole point of the book is hormones. But, you know, I have a section on hormones in my book, and it's a whole chapter that explains hormones. And for some women, hormones can definitely increase libido and can definitely hydrate the vaginal tissues. However, I have a very different way of using them. And then I also think that not all women need to use hormones. So we have our botanical medicines. There's a whole chapter on herbal aphrodisiacs. And these herbal aphrodisiacs are, you know, powerful medicines, actually, that have been passed down for centuries. They help to boost libido through increasing overall health and vitality by increasing that powerful life force. You know, and some of them are well-known, like ginseng. I mean, I think a lot of us have heard of ginseng, which, you know, modern research has shown that what was thought for ages, that it increases sort of this masculine aspect of qi or yang energy, bears out in our modern research, and that it increases circulation, that it can potentiate cortisol, which means it keeps cortisol in circulation longer, so people have more energy. It's an energetically very hot herb, so it's actually a great herb for men. It's a great herb for them for many reasons. It also has immune effects, and for women, they found that when women take the ginseng orally as a pill, that it can help increase vaginal secretions and hydrate the vaginal tissues. So, you know, there's a lot of herbal medicines that I mentioned that can have a number of very positive effects on the body that ultimately also increase libido. But it's overall going to be increasing health and vitality. Some of the other Chinese herbs are maybe not as well known, like cordyceps. And cordyceps, again, has been used for thousands of years. And what I love about cordyceps is that for women's libido, it's a really fantastic herb because not only does it work on building the overall immune system, but it also helps to nourish both the feminine aspect of qi, which is yin, as well as the masculine aspect of qi, which is yang. And for women, you know, they need to be both stimulated and relaxed, right? It's not just about being stimulated for them. And I think that this herb, you know, perfectly matches what a lot of women need in terms of just building from like a foundation of building that vital force and building that qi that will help them to have more of this energy, the sexual energy, creative energy, whatever you want to call it. Some of the other herbs that I mentioned are like maca, and maca is great for men in that it can increase spermatogenesis, which means the formation of sperm, increases the quality of the sperm. It's great for male infertility. For women, it seems to upregulate their hormones through the action on the higher centers, which is the brain, or in the brain, like the hypothalamic pituitary junction or axis. And the maca seems to really help to help women through perimenopause and menopause, and because it upregulates the hormonal output and helps to balance it, it can also have an effect on libido. Some of the other herbs are from different parts of the world, Catuaba, Muria Puama, Suma. So all of these herbs are actually in the book and can help the reader to discern, you know, which herb is appropriate for them, mm-hmm. depending on what they're going through. And then there are some products that are on the market that have a number of these in combination. And you know what? They're pretty effective. I've explored, you know, these myself. I've had given them to some patients, and you know, they have an effect in terms of, you know, increasing arousal, and overall, they're not going to be taking away from your health. They're going to be nurturing your health. A lot of them have an effect on the adrenal glands, which I talk about extensively in the book, because the adrenal glands, you know, they also release hormones, but they help us to respond to stressors. Mm-hmm. And if people are just burnt out and exhausted, then we need to really look at their adrenal glands, both men and women. You know, men who are going through an earlier andropause or male menopause, often they have lower adrenal function. And before they get on testosterone, it's really important that we help nurture and support their adrenals. So some of the herbs that I would give them are herbs that are specifically acting on the adrenals, but And in addition, these herbs are Chinese formulas that have, again, been around for thousands of years, and they help to build this kidney yang energy, the kidney energy. The kidney energy is like the source energy of the whole body. And if we can nurture that and nourish it, then people don't have as much joint pain, they have better circulation, they have better sleep, and especially for men. And for women, we need to nourish both the yin and the yang, the feminine aspect of qi as well as the masculine. And then there are formulas specifically for women to take that help to nourish their blood and nourish their yin and nourish their qi. So like one of the herbs is called Romania, and that's often in combination with some of these other herbs that I've mentioned. Mm. So anyhow,
yeah.
I think that when we really look at, you know, how do we really build libido and how do we build the sexual energy, you know, we want to do it over a period of time, and we want to create overall health in the body, and ultimately sexual energy will be the end result of that.
We're not looking for the quick fix here. That won't do it. Will not do it. By the way, I wanted to touch upon a couple of things that I think this also sort of goes back to the issue of concerns on the part of both men and women as to whether or not, gee, I don't know if I can do this. And it's not so much health conditions per se as Men who, because you mentioned a particular herb that stimulates sperm production, as well as herbs for women. And I'm wondering about those men who have had vasectomies, so their sperm isn't going anywhere, and women who have had full, partial or total hysterectomies where they don't have the organs that would normally function. What about those two areas in particular?
Well, I think there's a lot of controversy about vasectomies, and if there is going to be, if there are changes in libido in men who have had a vasectomy, I think that any time you have scar tissue, it can impede the flow of qi. So, you know, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it's not the healthiest thing. But from a planetary perspective, I think that vasectomies are an important aspect of people, you know, preventing unwanted pregnancies. And, you know, I've got my medical mind, and then I have my Chinese mind, right? So, you know, either one of those situations. And in terms of women, if they've had a total hysterectomy and they've had their ovaries removed, then, you know, these women do need a lot of support in terms of their adrenal health. And also because when the ovaries go through their what I call career change, it's really the adrenal glands that pick up where the ovaries left off. And we need to support that woman's adrenal glands. And in many cases, if that woman, like, is in her 30s or early 40s, she's going to need to be on hormones. And that will help her the best in terms of weathering that's the change in her body, going from a high hormonal state to a very low hormonal state. If she's a woman who's in her 70s and having her ovaries removed, well, she's already gone through the perimenopause, menopause, and has gone into a lower ovarian functioning state. So she probably won't need to be on estrogen. But a younger woman who's had her ovaries removed, absolutely, she'll need to be on estrogen and possibly also progesterone. All women who have had a hysterectomy do not have to be on progesterone to protect their uterus because they don't have it from any kind of unwanted buildup from estrogen alone or what we call unopposed estrogen. But women do need to be on estrogen and progesterone if they have a uterus and they're going to be taking estrogen, because the progesterone will help to prevent the buildup of the lining in the uterus, and that could lead to endometrial cancer if it wasn't shedded regularly. And when I do prescribe hormones, I always prescribe bioidentical natural hormones, and I always prescribe them in the lowest possible dose to get the greatest therapeutic effects. And I think that this is a very sane way of doing bioidentical hormones. I do prescribe it as a transdermal cream. These creams are applied to the vulva or the anal mucosa. That allows for the best absorption of these hormones. Instead of applying it to the inner wrist or behind the knees, for instance, then you have to, those hormones have to get through that very thick dermis. The other thing is, and I really stress this in the book, is that we want to make sure we have good detoxification of estrogens. And I do have my patients have a 24-hour urine hormone test to evaluate how well they're breaking their estrogens down. Once I put them on estrogen, then 3 months later they're going to be doing this test. We're going to make sure that they're breaking them down to friendly forms. Unfriendly forms can increase risk of cancers, and it's very easy to make sure that we're breaking them down to friendly forms. Iodine can help with that. Cruciferous vegetables can help with that. Other products can also help with that. Fish oils, calcium deglucarate, some of these compounds that I mentioned in the book that can really help women to break their estrogens down to friendly forms and can be making sure that they're not putting themselves at undue risk of cancers. Now, any kind of estrogen could increase risk of cancer, so even though we're doing that test, there's still some risk of increasing your risk of breast cancer or ovarian cancer if you still have your ovaries. We do want to be very vigilant in how we use hormones. We don't want to be using super physiologic doses. I see in some books that are out there, very popular books, that very high doses of estrogens are used or very high doses of progesterone are used, and women don't need to be on that high a dose. If you take too much hormone, your body is going to send out a lot of protein from the liver called sex hormone binding globulin to try to balance out the seesaw of hormones that are going up and then going down. We really want women and men, if they're going to be taking hormones, to be on just what they need, you know, not no more, no less. But just what they need. We don't want to be creating more physiologic stress. And we want to identify exactly what they need by testing before and testing after they get onto hormones.
And some of this starts to get a little complicated in one sense, but it is rather simple. If you're not feeling well and if you're not experiencing the kinds of things that you did, let's just say, in your 20s or your 30s, and you're in your 40s or your 50s, then it's time to start taking a look at, start with one aspect of your health. I have to say, doctor, that when 3 years ago, it was actually 3 years ago this month, that I started to experience, for some reason, my agitation level went up. I'm going to use that word, agitation level went up with the outside world. It was in January 3 years ago, that I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. And they ran every test in the book. Couldn't find anything that would cause my high blood pressure. I says, you're not going to. I could have told you. It's not there. It's up here in my head. I'm not handling the outside world well, and I know this. Now, It's 3 years later. I've been on a couple of different formulas of high blood pressure medication, found one that seems to work with little or no side effects. It is actually a beta blocker. And I'm feeling better. My mental state has improved immeasurably to where I'm
good.
I'm probably on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 3 years ago, it's probably down to a 3 or 4 today. And so I'm thinking that there's going to come a point, I'm hoping, when I don't have to take the beta blockers anymore.
Well, great.
And I know
that's fantastic.
Well, I also know, too, that it doesn't take much addition of weight to my body. And I'm talking 1 or 2 or 3 pounds. That's when I start feeling uncomfortable. My feet hurt. My legs hurt. I have a condition in my knee that I know is exacerbated by additional weight. And so just keeping the weight down, and of course the holidays don't help much, but that's not the holidays' fault. That's mine. And so as much as I love eggnog, I'll be going for the low-fat or non-fat eggnog without the alcohol and still be able to enjoy myself during the holidays. And I've never been on a diet. I'm probably one of the few people on the planet who has never, or at least in the United States, never felt the need. I always knew when I went and put my 36-inch waist pants on and they were just a little too tight, or when I put the belt on and I was at one point I'm down to the last little hole in the belt, and then a week or two later now I'm up one and then I'm up another one. That's my indicator that I need to do something here. But it was never a diet. It was knock off this, cut this out, and so forth. And I don't know if that's unusual. Obviously, the weight loss industry is a prime example that it's not, that it is unusual, that most people put on 10, 15, 20 pounds, and then they spend the next year trying to take it off until the holidays, and then they put it back on again.
Yeah, they do. There was a study that showed that the average person on Thanksgiving Day ingests 4,500 calories.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding?
I'm not.
Wow. Well, I mean, we just had Thanksgiving Thursday, and my wife purchased, and it was a 22-pound bird, but it's an organic, and of course, I have found, and correct me if I'm wrong, but fowl, chicken, turkey, those kinds of things, those are actually fairly good for you. They're unlike beef, which not only can tend to clog up your system, but also has a lot more fat that our systems can't really process, in any way, shape, or form. But if, like chicken and beef or fowl, I mean, chicken and turkey and bird, if you will, or fish, are fairly good for our systems in terms of maintaining a healthy weight and life.
Well,
what's your assessment?
Well, I think that we make choices each and every day, and actually your body will go to the weight that it's supposed to be at when you eat good food. You know, what's so amazing about our bodies is that we do not have to think about what our cells are doing. Our cells know what to do. All we have to do is just give them the ingredients for them to work the best that they can work.
And that's a good thing, because I got too much on my mind to have to start thinking about what each cell has to be doing.
Exactly, exactly. And it sounds like you just made some adjustments that, you know, it wasn't this overhaul, but it was just a, you know, one little step at a time. And I really encourage my patients and my listeners to just one little step at a time. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it really does start, you know, with your ability to care and love for yourself.
Well, before we wrap up the program, I want to ask you a final couple of questions here. Who is Dr. or Lori Steelsmith?
I'm supposed to answer that?
That's your question.
Oh, well, let's see. I am a health enthusiast.
I can tell.
And I want to spread the word.
And let me ask you, with the work that you're doing, what do you hope to or want to achieve?
Well, I hope to reach a lot of people through my writings, and I think we already have. We sold a lot of our first book, and I think our second book's done very well. And, you know, writing a book is a labor of love. You don't make a lot of money off of it, but you do fulfill your life purpose, which is what I feel like I'm doing, in being able to reach thousands of people in helping them to have healthier, happier lives.
I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. It's been a great hour, and I look forward to talking with you again in the near future. As our health improves, we hope that we've heard a few of the words that you've said, and we'll take them to heart. I want to remind our listeners also that there is an after view of this program, that meaning if you're listening to the radio program and we came to an end, there's more. If you were listening to the A-to-Zen.fm broadcast, there's more. Go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, to listen to more of the interview with Dr. Lori Steelsmith, co-author with her husband, Alex, who, by the way, what is he up to?
Oh, let's see. Right this moment, he's sleeping. It's early this morning.
Well, very good. We thank you so much for joining us. And again, the book is Great Sex, Naturally, and it is having to do with every woman's guide to enhancing her sexuality through the secrets of natural medicine. And again, I thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday, love Talal.